Welcome to Pep Talks. This is Stephen Lally on behalf of the great Eddie Pepitone. I am here. We are back at Pep Talks. It actually is legitimately a beautiful day in Burbank in Southern California. And I'm here with the great Rick Overton, the great comedian.
Thank you. Yes. Wow, that's some intro.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good, despite our...
So, like the sign says. No, I'm doing good. You know, I'm encouraged. Seeing those large Bernie crowds out there gives this old boy a lot of hope.
Did you see the May Day? The May Day people were on their way with their Bernie shirts today.
They sure were.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good thing to see.
As soon as I saw them, I said, you know they're going to fuck you with Biden, right? You know,
they
go, oh, yeah, they're going to try.
Of course.
They're going to try.
Of course. But here's one thing you might notice. They're really bad at succeeding at things now.
Oh.
They're really good at trying things because they do lots of them. But one after the next, it's like that drunken dad trying to get angrily win that doll for his kid at the carnival just starts hitting people with the ball and missing. And the angrier he gets, the more he's just wrecking everything.
But they're doubling down on what failed in 2016. They're going to double down on that.
I know.
This is like, it's like a bad Marvel movie where they roll out because they have to run, you know, the first.
Now let's put them together.
Yeah.
Now they're enemies. No, now they're friends in this one.
Right.
It's like pro wrestling where you're like, my parents, I don't know who believes in what, you know.
Well, we need 12 more villains in this one. Yeah. Instead of the one villain, we need 12 villains and none of them are progressive, but we're going to pimp them out as these progress. I mean, I admit that I was fooled by Beto. I was fooled for a little while.
Me too, and still until we started looking way into his record and what he voted for and what he didn't. And
where he took money from.
And what he took money from, which he promised he wouldn't, and then he did.
Right.
And then him saying nothing and just hoping waggedy arms and gouging hands and platitudes would be enough. And look, I'm skinny and Kennedy-like and teeth. And stare at my teeth, you know, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
It's not working. The crowd has the internet. I'm sorry. They have the internet.
Yeah, they do.
They can look at what you did.
Yeah.
I don't know what fantasy land these people come from where they think we can't look into this stuff. You're dividing the party. Yeah.
They want to absorb Bernie's. This is may I share with you my.
Go, man.
What my intuition about this?
Go.
They are going to absorb, like the conservatives, the Republican Party had a guy, Ron Paul, in 2008 who ran. And he ran on an anti-corporate capitalist message. They didn't even let him in the debates. But he was really popular. And then shortly after that, the Republican Party created their Tea Party movement.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to absorb what that guy was peddling and then put it out in their own kind of package, right? So this is what the Democratic Party's trying to do. They're going to absorb Sanders' message and try to manufacture a bunch of candidates.
Echo it without meaning it.
And by the way, all they need is a bridge to the next president from 2020 to 2024, because I believe they're going to roll out Michelle Obama. Right. So they just want to get past Sanders being of some age where he can be electable.
I call them copycrats. They are taking everything that Bernie said and trying to attach it to a party that's rolled over him like a steamroller. And so the copycrats are going to all say these things. Watch them not really know how to defend it when it comes down to a debate about it or when you're quizzed as to the details and minutiae of how you make that work. They won't be able to hold up to it like Bernie does.
Right, but okay, so here's a critical question for you. And I see, because you're a hero to me on social media, you know, because I don't know always how to deal with my friends who are centrists, you know, who are, by the way, I divide them into different categories. Some of them are just afraid.
Yeah, I have lots
of
friends.
Some of them are just afraid.
Who are lovely, brilliant people who are terrified. And when you put into a panic state, reason takes back seat to panic.
Right. Right. So those people are terrified. How do you deal with the, like, because I see you, you're like, I'm getting rid of you. I see it. I see your post. You're like, you're done.
Yeah.
You're out. I'm.
We thought we had 10 years left. They were wrong by half. They weren't even referring to just the human species. The human species isn't going to be the last thing to die on Earth. Little microbes are the last things to die on Earth. We're going way earlier. We're really fragile creatures that need a really specified environment to stay alive. We are houseplants, man. And we won't take the big change that the environment has waiting for us very well if we don't move now to abate some of that, to set it back, to counter it somehow. Because that will just take precedent. It has to. Water's more important than anything anyone has ever thought since their birth, or anything their fathers or their fathers or their fathers and mothers ever thought. No thought matters as much as water. No belief system, no amount of money, no amount of anything matters more than water. It's the single most important ingredient on Earth. And we're losing it at an incredible speed right now.
So why, explain to us why we're losing the water at an incredible speed. Because I don't completely comprehend that. I don't completely understand how, is it the waffling of the, is it the terrestrial waffling because of climate breakdown? Is that what?
Partly. And it's partly Nestle taking it and.
Right. Well, corporations.
Sucking it up and then poisoning the places that they can't suck up. So there's nothing but the water they took.
But certain countries have banned and outlawed these corporations. The Monsanto's banned.
We don't live in one of them.
We don't. I know. So
that's the problem. We're working on the country we live in now.
Right.
This is going to affect you a lot sooner than the news.
Right.
It's the other way around now.
Okay, so you have faith and you believe that if we have people of conscience, if we somehow shoehorn some people of conscience into power, that this can be averted.
The version is you did try. The other version you didn't try. Those are the two versions.
That's it. So we have no choice.
Yeah.
See, because sometimes Eddie.
You know, it's like NASA. I don't know. Hit the button or don't hit the button. We might blow up.
We got to throw
Skipper,
the Hail Mary.
Skipper. Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah, I got to do a Hail Mary because the species is on the edge now. So is that my panic move? I'm trying to apply reason, but incrementalism is not reason now. That's fake reason.
Right. What burns me are the people who don't understand how we got to this point. And they're the most frustrated by Trump because they don't really understand how Trump became president, how Trump was elected. Meaning, as the left moved to the center and then the right, which is what we have now, we have this Democratic Party, which is like, I call them Republicans who like gay people. That's what I, that's how the centrists, yeah, they're just, you know, they're gonna bomb the Middle East and then drop a transgender bathroom in there.
Right, you know? Exactly.
And these people drive me fucking off bonkers off the wall, up the wall.
Well, they're privileged people. And privilege means you don't have to look into all the news. You don't have to go to protest rallies if it doesn't affect you directly. You don't have to feel for others. That's part of what privilege is. Privilege is I'm done with it. Oh, I contributed already. Thank God I can finally focus on me. It's where narcissists go to find a label. And look outwardly like they're doing something constructive, you know. And for the longest time, they didn't get caught on it, and they had no plan B on what to do once they did. And that's where we are right now. They're getting caught on it. They're being called centrist is finally a dirty word. It took forever, but with the aid of lots of centrists, it was made a real thing.
Well, you know, dirty words work best when they're one or two syllables. You know,
centrist.
Yeah. That's why I hate neoliberal, because it's too, that's why I hate that term. Because it's so benign.
Yeah.
It's so fucking benign. I say solar panel on top of a gas station.
Neo, almost anything neo is bad. The only two good neos are neonatal and matrix. They're the only good neos.
Rick Overton, ladies and gentlemen. We have a comedy legend here today. Comedy legend. Do you know that you're seen that way as a comedy legend?
Oh, you can't focus on stuff like that. You got work to do, man.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Gotta look at what's going on today. Right,
yeah.
Here in the front of you and the news there and get it out there, you know.
Well,
maybe at the end of it all, you look back on it when you're,
okay,
you know, crap in the bed.
You're not there yet.
And the lines go straight. Yeah.
Yeah. You, famously, do you remember when we met? Do you remember our meeting?
This was about 6 years ago.
Close. Lori Buckley introduced us.
Right.
And the first thing I wanted to ask you was about Robin.
Was Trev there that night?
Who?
Her son?
No, he was on the road touring.
Right.
But it was Bill Bronner had that show.
Yeah.
And you were a guest. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, because we'd done shows together. I mean, I'd been on shows with you, but I'd never gotten to talk to you. And I asked you about Robin because I was curious about Robin. And this is, I know this is a total misdirection from climate breakdown and politics, geopolitical stuff. But I think it's fascinating that Robin was so loved that he could take your act. He could take jokes from other comedians. Wait, let me finish. But people loved him so much. He was such a good guy that he didn't come under the scrutiny that these guys like the guy who stole from Hicks, what's his name? Or the guy who, Mencia, you know, mm-hmm. What happened to Mencia?
He went so fast, he wasn't always aware of when he was recording and replaying. In his brain.
So you knew it wasn't a premeditated thing.
No, we sat and talked about it at length, you know, and he said, man, I'm sorry, you know, I go too fast and my brain loses track and, you know.
But he was your best friend, too.
That he always was.
That's so cool, dude.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us started doing comedy because of that guy.
Yeah. Good for you.
Sure. Robin Williams, Eddie Murphy Raw, Billy Crystal. I mean, I'm an 80s kid. You know, I grew up in the 80s, so I grew up watching, you know, I saw you in Willow.
Mm-hmm. No small parts, only small actors. Well, when they told me I was going to be 12 inches, little did I realize.
Yeah, you and Kevin Pollak, right?
Me and Kevin Pollak, that's right.
Yeah, well, so I was with Mark Brazil, and he was making fun of that movie, and I go, dude, that was a major part. It's funny how in your childhood, I still think it's a great movie. I stand by that. But Mark, I was, because he's, you know, a generation older than me. And I'm like, oh, so if I was a generation older, it's all funny how we just view the stuff by the time you're grown and you're a snob, you know, do you understand what I mean?
You're the biggest snob when you're a kid.
You think?
Kids are the biggest snobs. You get the snob slapped out of you as life goes on.
Pretense, beaten out of you.
Yeah, just you get corrected. Adjusted,
yeah,
along the way.
So you're pure when you're a kid.
Yeah, you're pure something when you're a kid.
What kind of kid were you? Were you in trouble a lot?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A few times.
Yeah, a couple times.
Can you share any memory of getting in trouble as a kid in school or
doing impressions of the teacher for the kids as the teachers got their back turned and turned around to the kids and, you know. And do that like that was like one of the first things I saw that could work a room as a kid.
How old? Could you give me an estimate?
Oh, I probably like, you know.
11?
No, 7, 8.
Oh, wow.
That's when you draw the picture of the teacher with the face and the teeth missing and the, you know.
Shit, I wish I'd done that. That's
missing
so...
teeth, block their teeth. Now, that's a big thing you got to do as a kid, you know, and stick body doing something goofy.
That's so, I hit the teacher in the eye with a fucking rock, accidentally.
Hmm.
And then I went and hid, and then they suspended me.
You're a prop act.
Yeah, prop act.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, it was a prop act.
Yeah, what? Yeah, Gallagher. Gallagher, move right, over. Right.
And Gallagher called me later, and he said, you know, you shouldn't be stealing my shit,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, man, listen.
There's three Gallaghers, by the way.
There's three of them, and one of them only does legumes. No, I don't know. But canned goods. He recycles. He gets the same food. He creeps up, puts it, sweeps it up, puts it back in the thing again for the next show.
Something tells me that act didn't work. Speaking of which, I headlined UCLA.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
How was the room?
Dude, it was... what have you heard about colleges? You've heard...
That there's a PC thing going on, and certain language that was okay before is not as welcome as it was at one time.
Okay, this was the first university I ever headlined, to be fair. So I don't have a huge resume of these universities. But, man, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's the language. I think it's the emotion. That's my thing. And part of it, I think, is that they're young and they're afraid to be expressing a tremendous amount of human emotion. This is a different generation. Because when I was in college, which was just, you know, whatever, 20 years ago, it wasn't that, you weren't as afraid to laugh out of turn at something or to laugh on your own at something. But I remember being insecure and wanting to get laid, you know, and wanting to be liked. I do remember that. But the kids were all laughing in unison. This is creep eerie. They were all laughing in unison. And I would be sitting in the back at the show watching the comics before me and laughing, but differently than them. And they would all turn around and look at me when I would laugh, as if I'd laughed out of turn and disrupted their... Mm. That was the weirdest thing, and it should have been a sign, if that ever happens at a comedy show, run for the fucking fire exit, because that is a weird, eerie, Stepford-y kind of thing.
Student body snatchers.
Invasion. Man, you're good. Comedy legend, Rick Overton with us, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, Eddie's not here. I know.
Hello, Eddie. We love and miss you.
We do miss you. Eddie's rampaging around New York with his friends looking for a bank to rob, and we miss you, Eddie. And I'm sure your fans miss you. One of the comments was, it feels like, because I did one on my own before. You're the second guest I've had when Eddie's been gone. The first one, we got a comment. It feels like dad left for cigarettes and never came back. That was the... So I tried my best to get a real badass motherfucker here so we wouldn't, you know, we would have a good time and... And I think that brings us to a time where we're in for an ad, everybody. Rick, I don't know if you know this, but we have great sponsors at this podcast.
Monetizing a podcast.
Monetizing a podcast.
That's the future, babies.
Yeah. Although, as Eddie has said, we don't see any money from these ads yet, but we're hoping one day we will. So here's our first ad. Are you a rich executive who's come under ridicule because of the embarrassing scandal or fraud? Let the people at Dan Smekowitz's Second Chance Institute help you repair your reputation by teaching you a second life skill. Sometimes firing thousands of employees while giving yourself a multi-million-dollar bonus can send the wrong message. Try softening the blow by playing Stairway to Heaven while employees read their pink slips and empty their desks.
Yeah.
Imagine how cool it would be if during your congressional testimony you started a close-up, you started doing close-up magic or wowed them with kazoo. Dan Smekowitz's Second Chance Institute has been helping even the most egregiously horrible executives remain socially popular. Elizabeth Holmes may have committed $700 million in security fraud, but her courtroom performance of Lady Gaga's Bad Romance on the xylophone is what she will be remembered for. When Deutsche Bank was accused of $234 billion in money laundering, its board of directors performed a dazzling rendition of the gypsy scene from Don Quixote Ballet. The Chicago Tribune gave him 4 stars. Give your dark cloud of corruption a silver lining with Dan Smekowitz's Second Chance Institute. Thank you, Dan. And you get a vote of confidence. Rick, you really enjoyed that. That's really cool, man.
I'm thinking that's my second career.
Dan, maybe you should be one of the instructors at the Dan Smekowitz Institute.
I'm a Smekowitz instructor. I do the Smekowitz system.
When did you start with the Smekowitz?
Roughly 7 seconds ago. So I've got a degree.
I'm an instructor.
I'm a master instructor, senior instructor.
Yeah. It seems like with the way you're dressed, you might have been psychically planning on going there from here.
I am here to inspire you.
And you have. You have inspired.
And to hypnotize you with hand-waggedy motions. Waggedy, waggedy, waggedy.
That was a little Sanders-ish.
Oh, he does a different thing with his hands. He has content behind the words, so I'm not looking at the hands.
The hands are
important. There's a big difference there, yeah.
Although, can you do the Sanders hands? Rick Overton doing the Sanders hands, everybody.
All of you. Out there, like that. He's reaching out, whereas most of the guys are just going, me, me, I, and our hands are all pointing in at themselves. Like the subconscious is a really interesting court witness against you sometimes, you know. It can show people stuff you had no idea it did if you're full of shit, you know.
What did you think when that bird landed on that podium?
Yeah, there's no way to rig that.
No.
You can't fake a thing like that. Cue the bird. You know, there's just no such thing.
Well, you can't get it to land right on the...
No, and then look at him and not move and all those things. There's just no bird that does that. There's no... I'm looking for videos of another case where the bird will land on a thing for a movie. It's 1,000 takes for that movie. Just get a digital goddamn bird for the movie. I'm not losing 3 more days to this shit, you know?
I heard Clinton was looking into a digital bird.
after that.
One appears on a stick. It's like the Python sketch. It just comes up behind the podium. You can see the person working it with a little stick. Oh, look, little birdie. And you can hear his voice. Cheep, cheep, cheep.
It was Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
It was Debbie.
That's why she got hired after they let her go, because she was going to work on the bird.
I built this bird from scratch, feather by feather, with the help of my cat.
Oh, many cats.
Many cats it took to put one bird together for this thing on a stick. Here's what I'm very encouraged about is so many people being on to the bullshit at once. It's like, you try it, meh. Another one, eh. It's like watching the auditions for America's Got Talent. You know, when they do the really initial auditions, it's like a montage of all the sucky guys that don't make it to the second round right now.
I'm wondering when these guys drop out, who they're going to throw their, are they going to all throw their support?
Who's not getting any heat at all right now?
Who is
Kamala is not getting
heat. She's not getting any heat
at all right
well,
now.
Well, any of a Klobuchar or...
Klobuchar.
She's not getting any heat.
No.
Beto isn't really even getting... He's, what, is he pulling at 5% or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when those guys drop out, it'll be telling to see. Cory Booker.
Joe's numbers aren't real. They caught CNN rigging the numbers against him. And MSNBC too.
That's incredibly disturbing.
Yeah. Now I'm sad to say it's credibly disturbing.
It's credibly disturbing.
Yeah.
But gosh, you're good. It is credibly disturbing. But it's, I just don't, the guy goes and has the Comcast lunch.
Yeah.
The Comcast fundraiser.
And he lets us know about it.
Right.
Like, what are we supposed to do after we found out about it? Now, you can't keep asking us not to notice shit, centrists.
Rick, you're going to be in on whatever candidate the Democratic Party put forth. Let's agree right now. Candidate they put forth, we're going to be all in it together.
I don't care. You ever see the people go, I don't care. I would vote for a pile of shit, an actual fly-covered pile of shit over this, what we have right now. 2020, get ready for the actual pile of fly-covered shit. President of the United States. Is that, be careful what you wish for. It's also be specific what you wish for. Boy, does corruption sneak in under the poorly laid out security system of moderation.
I'm going to throw a statistic at you, all right? About 12%, roughly, could be 13, could be, 14, but roughly, let's say, round down. Somewhere between 10 and 15%, so I round down to 12% of the people who voted for Barack Obama also voted for Donald Trump for president. That's a lot of fucking people.
Yeah, 12% is a big number.
What is that? To me, that says people wanted change. This guy sold him change. It didn't work. He didn't give him change. This guy's now selling change. So that is a that's who's going to decide that election, that 12%. Now, who would they vote for, Biden or Sanders?
If you have the internet and look at who meant it the entire time, who didn't work on mass incarceration, who, didn't vote for the war.
Didn't vote for the Iraq war.
War, yeah. Then that probably would have something to do with your decision.
Who didn't take any corporate political action money. Who got all their money from us, by the way. Right. Over 1 million contributions. That's a lot of fucking people.
See, a lot of them are going, yeah, well, I got that much money. Yeah, but you got it from three guys, douchebag.
Exactly right.
How
do Americans not put this shit together? This is simple shit. This is like you graduated high school, man.
When you say how do they not do that, look at those crowds again. Those people did do that.
Yeah, they have.
So when sometimes we're trained to miscategorize what the majority is. No, we're the majority. And the media says we aren't. But that's because, like in Idiocracy, because it has electrolytes, plants crave it.
Right.
We're trained to say this shit. It doesn't mean we mean it. How many times have you seen people going, we have to vote blue no matter who, and they'll post it like that was their idea?
No.
They're programmed to say it. They can't back it up once you corner them about it. They backpedal and stumble over themselves because there is not much more to say about it. You're supposed to end it at vote blue no matter who. Oh, it rhymed. I guess we'll go along with it. It's supposed to just shut you down, shame you down. But once that's done, they didn't plan on how to get out of that. They don't have Friday second show recovery skills. Like heckler skills of the audience, you know. They don't know, they don't have backpedal skills. They don't know how to do research either. They're not really looking into the things. They were hoping the first three things they said would be enough.
Okay, and what about like somebody like Bill Maher, who I always thought for decades was this really progressive left-wing guy who turns out really to be a guy who doesn't want anyone left of him on his panel. For the way I, you know, he doesn't mm-hmm. come off as a guy, comes off as a centrist who would say vote blue no matter who.
Maybe.
So
maybe now.
Is that just comfort? Mm-hmm. Is that
yes, comfort is an addiction.
That's what it
and
is.
You will fight for it with a switchblade and you'll kill anyone who comes for it.
So when people in our profession who are getting to this like centrist thing in our profession in comedy, right, who believe they're left and are centrist, that's because they're fucking rich.
The more you have to lose, the less liberal you're going to be if what you have to lose is a material thing. If what you have to lose is a moral thing, then maybe you're more on the other side of the situation. You're more on the progressive side. They want to see progress. Progress is a collective thing. Progress is for everyone, not just me and my friends on a weekend yacht trip somewhere. It has to mean people I've never met who will never say thank you for all the extra money I kicked in tax-wise. I just have to be okay with that planet.
Right. Man, I find it, listen, I have friends. I have to really be careful because I have friends who help me work, who help me, you know. But well, Eddie and I are pretty much on the same page politically. But there are a lot of friends of mine, people I write for, people I work with in comedy, who have totally differing political ideologies as me. And some of them are conservative, you know, really like label conservative. And I just keep my mouth shut. A lot of times because I need the work. I need the work. What advice would you give me?
Don't ask me that. Okay. I've lost a lot of work because of my big fucking mouth. Don't ask me that.
Okay.
Because if you watch my 1991 HBO special, that it did good. And it got the door slammed in my face for late night after that.
What? Really?
HBO. It's broken up on YouTube into five sections, thanks to Troy Conrad putting it up there on my behalf. He did that for me.
Amen.
So it'll show you what I was saying back then and how it's sort of, I thought I was having a great time, you know.
The audience loved it.
The audience was having a good time. Bill Hicks is coming out of UK with heavy stuff, you know. I was doing my thing and... then they just, I mean, I got acting work. That stayed on because that wasn't my words.
But the stand-up
yeah,
kind door.
Of dried up a little bit after
wow.
that. Didn't go away immediately, but it's the real momentum, the more political I got, the real momentum sort of diminished. So I sort of walked away from a career.
Now, you know, Carlin, you think maybe because he had the massive success before mm-hmm. that he was able to, because he was a...
They were fighting him the whole time.
Were they?
Oh, yeah. FBI had files on him and everything. They didn't know what to do with the fact that his celebrity transcended their ability to shut it down.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I didn't have that heat.
Right.
I can just
you
get
shut
down.
You weren't that famous yet.
Yeah, they could have shut it down.
And Hicks, they did too. I mean, Hicks...
They did. They had chased him to UK.
Yeah.
Right. I stayed. I didn't go to UK. And Rich Hall told me to go out. Bill told me to go out, and I didn't go. I wanted to stay.
Do you think it's still a better place for, I mean, as a
I'm hearing not the same. It's running the same course we did, where saturation starts to lead to, you know, it's not where we are. It's still doing better than us, and their festivals are doing great over there. But it's not like it was, I would say, 30 years ago when I was there.
Well, there's so many
or
fucking there's so many fucking comedians now.
Yeah, you start to,
you know.
And you can stay home and watch a lot of it on TV.
Right.
There's almost no way to avoid comedy.
Right.
You know, it'll be in a commercial. It'll be everywhere.
This is a weird thing for me because I'm angry about it. I'm angry that there's so many fucking comedians because it was more of a Jedi thing. I mean, it was something. It was a Jedi thing, you know, something if you were a comic, you were like a Highlander or a Jedi. You were
they don't hire the Jedi.
Unique. They don't hire the Jedis.
They hire the ones that have a magic ability to fill a room from one end to the other. That's some sort of a power, right?
The dark side?
I don't know. I think there's some great acts out there doing great things and filling up the room. And then there's just the way the business runs.
Right.
Some of them are artists and some of them are businessmen. And some of them are really good businessmen. Really, really, really good businessmen. Brilliant.
So Hollywood couldn't shut the door on George Carlin because he was too much of a, he was making them too much money.
Yeah, and it wasn't just Hollywood. He would just go wherever he went. And it became a popularity of accumulation.
So this is the
thing. And the records, the album business is a different industry.
Right.
He would do. Back then, it was a really different industry before the military-industrial complex bought all entertainment
that's,
for us.
And that's a very true thing I've
heard. So they'd be looser. There was people doing drugs and, you know, acid and cocaine and weed and saying, yeah, man, let's put this record out. And this is the guy's an executive back then, you know. And that doesn't exist.
There were more individual.
Yeah. Now there's a lot of business school graduates in control of art.
The military-industrial complex owning the show business and the studios, the movie studios specifically running the movie studios are sort of as a shadow. When do you think that really picked up, 80s, 90s? When did you think that escalated?
Around Reagan.
But the movies and the comedy in the 80s was still good.
Some were getting away with it because even when something takes over, it doesn't know what it's doing. It's improvising, and these guys are not good improvisers.
So they didn't get a toehold until probably the 90s.
Some things got away. Paul Verhoeven got away from them. They didn't understand what he was doing right in front of them and to their face.
RoboCop.
Yeah, they didn't realize that was a parody of them.
So they're not sophisticated enough to know they're being made fun of sometimes.
Sometimes not.
That's beautiful. That gives me some hope.
Well, they, you know, the same thing that would connect them to the bit or get the joke would be the same thing to connect them to humanity and not want to do these things. That's not what a sociopath does.
Well, they must be pissed off when they finally figure out that they're being made a fool of.
Mm-hmm. That's why they redid all these Verhoeven movies without the
Total
Verhoeven
recall,
angle, where now
right.
It's much more about the authority being the good guy. And,
well,
you know.
Everything now is about not everything in entertainment, especially in movies and film, cinema, is about getting into the system and then changing the system, not being a rebel who destroys the system, which is what almost all of the cinematic stuff that was coming out, even the 80s still had it, even if it was an empty platitude.
Yeah.
You dig what I'm saying? So yeah. Now it's about, I just want to join. I want to be part of, I want to,
yeah.
Be, you know.
Yeah.
That's a crazy fucking thing. People, I don't know. This is one thing
crazy.
That
it's crazy. It's I think sometimes we give the word crazy to think we say evil is crazy a lot. Oh, he's stupid. That guy's just stupid. No, he's evil. And we use stupid because you give him a pass. Oh, he's just stupid. Let him go. Nah, let him go. He's just stupid. And then he does another horrible thing. Nah, he's so stupid. No, he's not. He's evil. And we're trained with electrolytes to say that evil is stupid.
So retooling the language to say...
Well, they've retooled us already. We are a retooled species. We are a highly modified, genetically modified organism.
So when I'm entertaining these UCLA kids, though, to the point, they didn't grow up with anything of destroy the system. They grew up with get in.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're laughing together. I don't think they're bad. I'm not, you know... I like them. I met them before the show. I thought they were really nice people. I didn't get the feeling they were PC at all, by the way. I thought they were cool. I mean, I wouldn't spend a tremendous amount of time with them, but there was no language restrictions. They had booked me as the headliner. I'm a white, straight man who's obviously super... came through black comedy clubs, you know, for 10 years. They know who I am. So they booked me. But I scared the shit out of them. But I scared the shit out of them.
With what? What scared them?
Look, I went on. The comic who went on before me was 6'7". How tall are you?
6'4".
Okay, 6'7". I'm 5'5". So I went on after him, and I said, you know, if I was as tall as that last guy, I never would have had to do this shit in the first place.
And?
Nobody laughed. Nothing. Then I said, I guess you guys are the ones whose parents didn't con you into this motherfucker. Nothing. Then I said, you know, I did a whole thing about the... I said things that were funny. I talked about myself being the only Jew in black comedy clubs for 10 years and living in a car I can't jack off in. And, you know, and they didn't think any of that was funny.
Oh,
that scared the shit out of them. Maybe because it's UCLA. It's possible if I go to a different school, like a smaller school where kids aren't as affluent, maybe it would be funny. But it made me sad because I thought these kids are supposed to be the hip, the future. You know, this is a college audience. This is supposed to be so fun. This is great. And anyway,
that's what I'm hearing. But I don't do them, so I don't have my story goes so back so many years. It was fun when I did it.
Oh, fuck you.
Yeah, it was great. 70s, man.
Oh, fuck off. Okay, so when did you start doing stand up? What was the? could you take us back to that?
I'm guessing 71 with a comedy partner, late 70s, 71, with Anthony Pastore, who lives in Florida now, and he's Ton, T-O-N-N, Pastore, and we're over to the Pastore. And we did comedy for, you know, assemblies at Dwight Morrow High School in Englewood, New Jersey, which cranked out the same Richard Lewis a few years earlier at that school. And we went to school with Travolta. But so they had like a lot of entertainment encouragement going on at the school. And a pretty active arts department. So they encouraged, if you had a sense of humor, well, then see what you got, you know. And so I started doing it then. And so you want to say when I started getting paid? Or when I started getting laughs.
Okay, both.
Started getting laughs in 71. I mean, as a kid, I would do it, and a younger kid, I would do it as just a goof in class.
Well, obviously,
and
7 years old.
And sketches, but I mean, here's the show, curtain up, lights up, here's the bit, wrote it ourselves, and got a laugh, lights down, sketch work, high five, you know. That's like in 71, first assembly. And then
paid.
He went off to do his thing work-wise, and I hooked up with another guy, Roger Sullivan. We did 5 years, Overton Sullivan. And you stay in art form of purity right up until they start paying you. And then everything breaks down into whose premise was more important than whose punchline and who's paying for the gas in the goddamn car.
Well, you had another guy. You know, it's like a band.
You only get paid once.
You had to split the money.
You don't get the amount of money that the guy right on ahead of you got. Because there's two of you.
Right. Man. So you had to go on your own. When did you go on your own?
78.
So you were a double act, and Carlin, by the way, to bring him up again, also did that. You know, he had to break out of that.
I know.
He was
Jack
making
Burns.
A tremendous amount of money. They were making, like, from what Carlin, the interviews he said, I mean, he might have been exaggerating it. They were making a living.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing well.
Yeah.
So 78, so about 7 or 8 years of doing this. Were you scared when you mm-hmm. went off?
Terrified. Wondering if I could go on my own. But doing improv helped me get out of it.
Okay, so when was the first time you did solo stand-up?
Well, when things were starting to go bad with Raj. And we were having a little trouble.
Do you remember this show? Can you remember the place?
I was at the Improv. And I went up and did a spot. And, you know, I was worried because Raj's going to hear I did a spot. But I got to do a fucking spot. I got to find out if I got the goods, man. I got to survive this not continuing in case it doesn't continue, man.
Rick is a sensitive guy. He was concerned about Raj. You hear that?
I felt weird about him finding out about it. And he did. And it was weird. And shit, you know. But that's just the way these things go sometimes when you have to find out if you got what's next. Teams break up. It happens.
But if you hadn't done that, it would have been a totally different path for you in life if you hadn't done stand-up solo.
I would have maybe found another partner.
Maybe,
I like teams, and I might have just gone straight into acting. But the solo act went good enough for a little while, so I did that, and it helped me get into acting.
Okay, when would you say your break was, your first real break that put you over, that where you felt like, now I can do this all the time, I can, you know... You were always making a living, weren't you?
I mean, it was started getting good when I was working at booking gigs at my father's place in Long Island, Roslyn, Long Island, and the Bijou and the Bayou down in either D.C. or Philly, and they started using me to open for musical acts all the time, so I got to work with a lot of music acts.
So this is before, really, the stand-up comedy clubs.
Beginning of it. It was beginning, and this was supplemental work that was right there all the time. But they heard about all the hot comedy clubs. They started using them for music acts a lot. So that was a pretty steady work for me for a little while. And then an offer to move out and sign with Chris Albrecht with ICM because he was taking a whole wave of us funny guys to form a new division at ICM out west. And so I moved out west and we, you know, started making it happen from there.
Cool, man.
And then Gary Marshall gave me my first movie and Young Doctors in Love. Gary Marshall's the reason I got into film.
Young Doctors in Love. Were you, did you, are you friends with Kyle Hefner?
Hef, of course.
Yeah. Was he within, he was in that, right?
Oh, I'm the only guy that does an impression of his laugh.
Go ahead. Oh, that is Chicago Kyle Hefner.
Hey,
another
Hef.
OG.
I miss you, buddy.
Yeah. What a great guy.
Yeah, great guy.
What a guy. We need to bring him on the podcast.
Oh, he was good in Flashdance.
Yeah.
He was the comic in Flashdance.
He was in fucking Runaway Train.
Runaway Train, man. Good work.
Yeah. So you were in come on, my fucking favorite movie, and I'm brain farting. Beverly Hills Cop.
We improvised a little bit of that scene.
Really?
Yeah. This was, and I have a little fun with it, you know. So the sort of conversationality of it and all that, where they gave him a match, and, you know, we're going to have the IRS down here to look up your ass with an iron high school microscope, you know.
Yeah, that's so cool. I'm sorry. I'm a little starstruck. A little starstruck, buddy.
Don't do that.
I love that. I love it. Just enjoy it, because it's really genuine. Like, this is the shit. I grew up watching. I met Eddie because I wrote for Cat Williams. So when I was, and Cat was,
did a good job. He does funny stuff, man. He cracks me up.
He didn't need me. I mean, I'm when he says my white friends introduced me to the vaporizer, that was me. So I got him a vaporizer. That's a pretty big honor to get. But when he was really hot, you know, Eddie, he came to see him live because they had a movie together. We're going to do a movie and everything. Of course, that all fell apart. But I met him and I couldn't, you know, it's your hero. You had to have a hero like that who you met.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. You know, one time or another.
I was tongue-tied when I ran through a revolving door. I was shooting a movie 25 years ago in Germany called The High Crusade. And I had a day off. And I went to the Vier Jahrzeiten Hotel in Munich. That means four seasons. Jahrzeiten is a season. So I went to the Four Seasons and go, check it out. I hear it's a really great looking hotel lobby. I go inside. I go through, bonk, right into John Cleese. And I was completely tongue-tied. I fell apart. And I'm like, Mr. Cleese, this is, for all the amount of years, I couldn't complete any sentence. It would be like just the start of 10 sentences. Because you have always been, and I'm just, you know, like that.
Did he help you out?
Yeah, he goes, no, so are you an entertainer yourself? And I went, oh, yes, thank you. You broke that. Yeah, I do. I'm here. In fact, I'm playing a knight in a movie. Well, you know, you might want to have a look at the armor, because perhaps you're wearing some of our props. And it turned out some of our props were from Holy Road.
No,
there's just so much of that, you know, crusader shit to go
around. Well, sure, yeah.
So that was it. That's my tongue-tied meet the hero story. And then, of course, Jonathan Winters, if you watch The Green Room, Paul Provenza's Green Room on Showtime, you will see me the entire time just staring at Jonathan Winters, sitting there just, oh, this is so great.
That must have been fun for Robin to do Mork and Mindy with
and
him.
Robert Klein. I was there with Robert Klein at the same show, and I'm also staring at one of the other heroes, Robert Klein. I was there with two heroes.
You're as funny as Robert Klein, dude.
Oh man, he's the king.
He's pretty great, but you're pretty fucking great. I've seen you live, dude.
Thanks, man.
You know. Anyway, it's funny that it's just funny the way we see ourselves, you know, because we coming up all saw you as fuck. It's Rick Overton. Rick Overton. Anyway, don't get too fucking cocky. So now's a good time for a second ad, I think.
Let's hear it.
Most home insecticides are hazardous around babies and pets. They leave thick foams of oily residue that children find delicious. Raid Utopia is the chemical-free way to rid yourself of household pests. Raid Utopia shows off your household pests, a series of TED Talks, helps them unionize, then empowers them to overthrow the hive. Within weeks, the bugs in your home will be off welfare and hard at work, enjoying a golden age of prosperity and fortune. Raid will help the bugs discover religion, psychology, poetry, and art. Inevitably, some bugs will rise to power by manipulating public opinion with greed, envy, jealousy, and a xenophobic fear of the other. Soon, even the happiest bugs will demand a return to values, twisting once content population into a powder keg of violence and intolerance, eventually igniting into civil war. The insects will survive. The insects that survive will house no concept of self, eventually starving to death while browsing YouTube and Instagram for answers, finding only beauty tips and cat videos in return. Raid Utopia. Is it truly better to have loved and lost? No, I tell you. That's why Raid also poisons that. That's why Raid also makes poisons that will kill bugs on contact. Children and pets, be damned.
That's it.
Thank you, Raid Utopia.
That's
and these
That's
ads.
Our fate.
Yeah, yeah, boy, Matt really killed. These ads are written by our producer Matt Rossimoto, who is a very, very talented guy
and
who,
conscientious.
And conscientious. Oh,
woke,
yeah.
woke
yeah.
dude.
He's a woke dude. He's a woke dude.
Woke, woke.
He's the only person liking my Twitter. My Twitter post. So I'm glad I have one. Thank you, Matt, for writing these fucking hilarious.
Good
maybe
stuff.
Maybe we can get Rick to read our last ad at some point. Emma, how are we doing?
45.
40 minutes?
45. Yeah.
45. Wow, we did 45 minutes talking together, Rick.
Booming and zooming.
Pretty good, man. Yeah. I need to have more legends on when I, you know, Mark Brazil was the first.
Very good.
Guy. Very funny dude. And also,
he has a tale or two to tell.
Oh my gosh, this guy got stories up the ass, man. Yeah, yeah. Great stories. Mm-hmm. But Eddie and I, by the way, do you have anything coming up that you'd like to plug or promote or tell us about? We would love to know about.
I'm going to be on the last episode of Mom this season on CBS, and I'm waiting to hear the date on it, but that's what's going to be.
That's great. That's Rick Overton. And I am going to be at the Los Angeles Stand-Up Comedy Festival on June 22nd and 23rd. Check my website, StephenLally.com, for specific times and et cetera. So we talked about centrists. Mm. We went over the career. And what else were we going to talk about? Do you remember? What did I text you?
Well, we kind of talked about the environment, like you were saying.
The environment.
That's been included.
Yeah. And, how did you meet Eddie? How long have you known Eddie?
Eddie Pepitone.
The...
I know Eddie from stand-up.
Okay.
Yeah.
New York.
And out here more.
Okay.
But we would run into each other in New York on occasion, but we really got to be tight here. And it's a bunch of years ago now. I remember when Eddie had long, luxurious hair.
No. Oh, shut the fuck. You could have got me with that.
And me too. we've sort of lived parallel physical stuff as... you know, brotherhood of complaints. And he has always been one of the truth-teller guys to me, you know, so I keep an eye on what he's doing next. He has a great way of deconstructing things. He doesn't just deconstruct the concept. He deconstructs the way it's being shown to us. He deconstructs the people who are doing it all in one shot.
Yeah, he doesn't even know what he's doing. He's not even conscious fully of what. That's an amazing thing. He doesn't remember his own fucking material.
He's channeling genius.
Holy inspiration.
Yeah.
What, can you do your impression of, because we got to hear that a little bit.
Can I do my impression of Eddie Pepitone? I can't do it for long because it hurts.
That's Rick Overton. Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Overton doing channeling Eddie Pepitone and I think a little bit of Joe Pesci in there.
Hey, this fucking prick over here, huh? He's a little short over here.
How am I funny? What the fuck is so funny about me? How the fuck am I funny to you? What the fuck is so funny? You said it.
I'm funny.
You said it.
What are you talking about?
You said it. I don't know what you said. You said it. You said I'm funny. So how the fuck am I funny to you? What am I, clown? Do I amuse you?
Yeah.
Amuse you?
Great. Yeah, yeah. Nice.
We used to, in college, we just get high and
a little bit.
Reenact scenes from Raging Bull. I mean, you know, you know you're not getting laid when you and your buddies are sitting around reenacting. You say, did you fuck my wife? Did you fuck my
Fix
wife?
Fix your huh? TV, you
Thick,
fat
you
fuck.
You fat fuck. Eat your fucking sandwich. Yeah.
Super defensive, trying to derail him. Right away.
Imagine those guys entertaining a college campus.
Oh man,
what's the matter with you fucks? You're a room full of fucks.
Eddie and I were on the way. We were leaving the podcast last week.
Who else do you do?
Who else? Woody Allen.
Let's hear what.
How, you know, why am, why do you, you know, bring me into this? How, why would you even bring me into this story? I didn't, I had nothing to do. You know, you use me, you bring me into the joke, and then, you know, you're using lewds and dropping Percocet and angel dust. You should abandon the show and open up pharmacy.
That's great.
Thanks, right?
What other guys do? I want to see
I'm fucking showcasing for Rick Overton.
I like good impressions.
Cat?
Oh, that's your cat.
Mr. Lally, you're a very funny Jew. All the friends I have say you're funny. You can write for me. I don't need any jokes. You can just write for me and collect. Everybody gets a paycheck in this motherfucker every week.
Oh, it's good. That's his register.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Here's Harrison Ford in his trailer.
Close the trailer door. You're letting all the smoke out.
Big stoner?
No. Is that right?
No.
Harrison Ford?
I'm asking.
What?
No.
Harrison Ford's a big... Yeah, he's totally legendary. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Who else do you do?
Well, there was a time when it was okay to do Morgan Freeman.
Oh, my God.
Now, that impression has to go on hold. Revelations have come out that have made my impression untenable.
What are those revelations, Morgan?
Oh, just certain things I did and said. And the age of the person I did and said it with. And so.
And the relation of the person.
And the relation of the person as well. So there's a couple of complications involved.
Oh, here's one for you.
I'm going to raise bees.
I got one for you.
Yeah.
She might have been 15 when you get that little red beaver right up there. No man alive could resist that, Doc. And now they're telling me I'm crazy because I don't sit there like a goddamn vegetable. Don't make a bit of sense to me. If that's what being crazy is, then I'm senseless out of it, donned on the road whack. Where's Turkle? Why doesn't he answer? He's off, probably jerking off somewhere.
Chris.
Ain't nobody jerking off nowhere, motherfucker. That's Turkle, what are you doing? Go out there and talk to her. I'm doing the same thing you're doing, Mac Murphy. Hiding, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's good. Oh, you got a bunch of guys. You put them all in the one scene.
I put that on my college answering machine when people would call. They would hear that.
Since Mike McRae, I don't do my certain impressions because he just has them too good, you know. You listen to McRae, right, on Jimmy Dore?
Oh, yeah.
I have shelved my Riptorn.
Oh.
Yes, dear son, I just put a nail in the wall
defending
and hung the impression up.
Defending your life.
Oh, you're that's curious. That's cute.
Little brains.
Little brains. Oh, it tastes like horseshit. You wouldn't like it.
Forgive me.
I was trapped. You wouldn't understand. Well, no, try me. I was trapped in the inner circle of thought. You're right. I don't understand.
I told you so.
Told you so. That's
great, great movie. One of my favorites.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's great, man. Chris Edgerly is another one. I don't know if you know who he is.
Oh,
he does,
I know Chris Edgerly.
He does some killer fucking impressions.
Really?
Man. Yeah, he does Nick Nolte like spot on.
Oh, Greg Travis has a great Nick Nolte too. If you ever look at a YouTube of Travis as Nick Nolte.
Greg Travis, people, you heard it right here. Greg Travis.
Great impression. Does a great Mick Jagger. Has a lot of great impressions.
Rick, would you read us our final ad? Yeah?
All right, let's have a look. Oh, for Christ's sakes, that's the print?
This is too small?
I can't read it, man.
I'll read it.
It's too small.
Okay, I got it. That's Rick Overton attempting to read and agreeing to read an ad that is just...
I can't.
And apropos, the older you get, the harder it is to see. I'm just kidding. The older you get, the harder it is to date. Our bodies ache, our best bits begin to sag, and it's near impossible to judge the amount of fart we're about to expose, if we want to or not. Timex Fartometer is the most trusted sports watch when it comes to detecting just what kind of anal ammo you're packing. With its patented comfort grip honk monitoring rod inserted, a barely noticeable 7 inches, into the rectum, your fartometer will alert you before you commit a brown crime.
Fartometer. It's fartometer, dear fellow.
Fartometer?
That's fartometer, old boy.
As John Cleese would say.
Yes, it's fartometer. It's not really very effective at all, is it?
I think I'm going to read the entire ad in that.
Yes, why don't you do it like him?
A series of blinking LED lights and intense vibrations from your Timex fartometer lets you know in an instant if you're fought as a gentle breeze, reasonably passable and polite company, or if you are to expect the wet, stuttering sounds of a cartoon duck being devoured by an onboard motor while your angry bowels paint your slacks a fresco made from a hothouse jams and cream. Dan Hamrod of Slouch Bend, Illinois says, it's bigger than a diver's watch, and it goes off all the time. It's like I'm carrying an infinity gauntlet, but its only power is to warn me if my stomach is making a mosaic from peanut butter and corn.
I kept it up my ass. I'll be damned.
Christopher Walken.
Oh, come on.
So you're on a date, don't let your intestinal fortitude become the topic of conversation. Let the Timex fartometer help you. Keep it in your pants. Thank you, Timex fartometer and Rick Overton, for... How are we doing, Emma? Wow, 55. We got 5 minutes. So,
I can't do 55.
We've heard Sammy Hagar impression.
Yeah.
We've heard Christopher Walken. We've heard John Cleese. We've heard a number of... You've been entertained for free today. You should be very, very fortunate.
What did it cost them, really, at the end of the
Eddie
day?
Eddie being gone.
Eddie being
That's
gone
what it
for cigarettes.
That's right. Never coming back.
No, he's not
actually
coming back.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the new state of your podcast. I'm
going to
be here.
He's your step host.
Yeah.
I'm your mean alcoholic step host, but your mom digs me, so don't make her cry.
I'm David Brenner, but just not as entertaining. I said,
they'll notice. Isn't that weird? I gave him a joke.
Tell us.
I gave him the joke when he said, you ever notice when someone's got the coat hanger in the car window and he's trying to pull the little lever up on the lock, and someone will always walk up to him and say, hey, did you lock your keys in the car? And his punch he had so far was, no, I always do this to get in the car. And I thought, why don't you tag it with, I always do this to get in the car. You know, thank God the top was down. And I got the bigger laugh.
Did he do that on the
Yeah, so as a kid, it was the first time I gave someone big a joke.
Oh, dude.
And they used the joke instead of giving me confidence.
Tonight Show?
It might have been, yeah. I'm not sure about that, but that might have been. And so it gave me confidence. I would give other people lines and starting to have confidence in doing that,
right.
You know? So it became like a tradition for us to throw each other lines. It was sort of bragging rights.
Yeah,
I'm so abundant, I can give you a line.
Isn't that 50% of talent is confidence? 50%. Somewhere, there's some large percentage of talent just being confident.
Yeah, I think that's a variable that rolls like the ocean. And it has to do with circumstance, and the next challenge. And I think, look, you mark yourself on an overall bell curve mean average of things you've mostly succeeded at, even though you were struck with the challenge of.
Yeah.
And you can sort of average your life out a little bit with that. But there's going to be stuff that still knocks you for a loop, and that's part of the excitement. That's why I do that game set list, that improvised stand-up show. It's because
Troy's,
I want to get knocked for a loop.
Troy show.
Troy Conrad and Paul Provenza have put on something that I think is one of the best things that happened to comedy. It's exciting.
It's improvisational.
You got to say, you don't do your act, you got to say what they throw up on the screen.
Right.
Turn that into the act to a cold crowd.
Right.
And
I've seen
your heart
you it,
gets going and you're back at being the kid again, meeting it's not the same old, you know. It's great. I love it. One of the best things. Thank you guys for making that. Woo!
Troy Conrad gets shouts out on our – I've known Troy Conrad since I moved to L.A. Troy Conrad and I met at Mixed Nuts Comedy Club. Troy was one of the only white guys in a black club. Mm. And according to him, which at the bowling alley where I saw you – he was telling me we went and did other black clubs together, which I guess I was too high to remember at the time. But but I've known him a long time, and
he's
what
a great man.
Class act, dude.
Class, good man,
yeah.
And brilliant.
Great photographer.
And his comedy store series is like should be award winning stuff, you know. If it isn't already, it should be.
Well, it's on the walls at the comedy store.
Yeah, he is a brilliant artist.
Well, Rick Overton, you badass motherfucker. We're gonna get toward our show's end here, where if you've listened to us this long, you really should brag about it. Give us a review on iTunes, subscribe on YouTube, like us on SoundCloud, or do whatever Spotify asks you to do. Really, I have no idea. If you really, really like us, you should visit us at peptalkspodcast.com. We have a website now where you can find a donate button. That is how Eddie and I get paid or plan to get paid. Think of it like a tip jar. You tip your coffee person, and they at least get paid to pour overpriced bean water into a cup. We don't get paid. Pep Talks is a labor of love. Every week we serve this fucking bean water knowledge into a cup of your brains. And I think we can all agree that it's worth a buck or two. Just ask real person Michael O'Neill, who was kind enough to take money from his kid's college fund so Eddie could put a down payment on a new hat. I haven't eaten in a few days, but Eddie said he really needed that hat. I asked if maybe I could keep the box, and he flew off to New York. So things are looking up. Hey, if you ain't doing nothing, why not contact the show? Call us. We'd love to hear from you. 424-262-0904. That's 424-262-0904. You can email us at fanmail@peptalkspodcast.com. Visit us again at peptalkspodcast.com. Our engineer today is Emma Erdbrink. Great job, Emma. And Aaron Brunghart. And our producer is Matt Rossimoto. And I am Stephen Lally. On behalf of Eddie Pepitone and the brilliant, legendary Rick Overton, thank you so much. We'll see you next week. Pep Talks.